Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. With the events of September 11th, 2001, came a realization that few people in the United States know much about other countries, and few people in other countries know much about the United States. The Peace Corps has, to some extent, changed that aspect of lack of knowledge and understanding. President Bush, in his State of the Union message last January, asked Congress to increase the size of the Peace Corps in the next 5 years to 15,000 members, the size of the Peace Corps shortly after it began in 1961. Sam Farr is a member of Congress from Carmel, California, representing the Central Coast of California. He's also a former Peace Corps volunteer, having served in Colombia from 1964 to 1966. He is one of six former Peace Corps volunteers now serving in Congress. At the time of the celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Peace Corps in late June of 2002, Congressman Farr and Senator Dodd of Connecticut introduced legislation to increase the size of the Peace Corps. I was there, and I met with Sam at his home in Washington, D.C., and I asked him about this legislation and its prospects in Congress.
Well, let me give you a little bit of background about the Peace Corps. When you were in the Peace Corps and I was in the Peace Corps, we had about 15,000 volunteers that were in the Peace Corps in the 60s and 70s. Essentially, under Republican presidents, the size of the Peace Corps was drastically cut back to its size of, it got down to almost 3,000 volunteers and has been built up under the Clinton administration to about 7,000 volunteers. To Bush's credit, he said he wanted to double the size, so it would bring it back to its original 15,000. Sergeant Shriver, on the other hand, said the other night at the 40th anniversary, 40 plus one, because the 40th anniversary was canceled last year because of 9/11, that he'd like to see a Peace Corps of 100,000. Frankly, I think Sergeant Shriver and the early founders would rather have the Peace Corps larger than the military corps.
What's going on with the Peace Corps bill now in Congress?
Well, with all the volunteers in town, we were introducing legislation this last week in Congress, and Senator Dodd introduced his legislation in the Senate. I have the same copy, the same piece of legislation that I introduced in the House.
Language is the same between
The Senator's language and my language is exactly the same, and the Senator is actually pushing for a markup, which means a vote on the bill, this week as we talk. I mean, he's moved very quickly. The House is... a little, because of the administration in the Peace Corps, is a little concerned that Congress is trying to tell the Peace Corps what to do. They kind of don't want any restrictions. It's not really restrictions. It's just an encouragement that we take all of the ideals of the Peace Corps and really affirm them in law. For example, having a firewall between the Peace Corps and any intelligence agency.
Keeping the Peace Corps independent.
Totally independent. And in fact, we put in there one of the provisions that is controversial because the president has found this new Freedom Corps. That Freedom Corps is essentially a one-stop volunteer number or center that will try to get people to volunteer for all kinds of things, including being part of the national security through helping local law enforcement and first responders. And we feel that even that may have some taint. That if you went through that to be the Peace Corps. So what we end up in saying is the Peace Corps shall recruit Peace Corps volunteers and nobody else. That language we will have some controversy over.
What is that controversy?
Well, the Republicans don't want Congress to tell them to do anything at all with the Peace Corps. They want to just handle it their way. Which isn't, you know... If this legislation fails, it doesn't mean the Peace Corps is in trouble. It just, I think that the language that we're trying to adopt, we've had 40 years of experience with the Peace Corps. We now want to just put some things in law that to make sure that into the future, the nature of the Peace Corps doesn't change. But the fact that Congress is putting some direction and some limitation on the Peace Corps has some Republicans concerned, just some. But the Republicans are in control of the House. The Senate is controlled by the Democrats. So what the likely scenario is that the Dodd bill will race through the Senate, waiting for a House bill so that they can go into conference and work out the differences.
Do you see success with that happening before Congress ends?
Well, it's a race to the finish. We only have a few more months. We don't have a deadline like the California legislature has, so we could be here till the new Congress is sworn in January of next year. The likelihood right now, we're very slow this year. We haven't gotten much done. And we're just about to enter July. We have a 4th of July week off. We have the month of August off. That means we only have 3 weeks left in July. We come back in September. This is an election year. Every member of Congress is up for re-election. That's 435 seats that are out there running for re-election. The election's in November. That means we got to be home some of the time in October. So the thinking is that we'll probably come back, work until mid-October at the latest, and then recess and come back as a lame duck Congress after the elections to finish up the work.
Do you think that President Bush would have supported doubling the size of the Peace Corps but for the September 11th issues?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think he likes the Peace Corps. He's had relatives, I think, that have been in the Peace Corps. He and I met back in the early 70s when he was a student at Yale. I had just returned from the Peace Corps. His cousin married my sister, so we were both ushers in the wedding. And I remember we discussed it. We were just young kids at the time, both interested in politics. Him being a prominent Republican family and my family being a prominent Democratic family, it was a very political wedding. And then I've lobbied him ever since he's been elected and signing, getting letters signed by a lot of members of Congress to double the size. So we've been petitioning the White House, and I think his advisors told him that it was a good political thing to do, and frankly, I think it probably was something he wanted to do. I don't think this was a hard hard issue for him. I think he really believes in some kind of universal service, not yet ready to sort of legislate that. I mean, I hope that there's a day in America where everybody grows up giving something. You know, I don't think it's so much you have to take time out of your life to give. I think you just expand your life, your horizons, and the country could be so much better off if we had kind of universal service.
When you and I were in the Peace Corps, there was a whole lot of community development where people who were then our age, in our early 20s, we're working in small communities throughout the world, you in Colombia, me in Peru. As I understand, the new direction of the Peace Corps is to no longer have the community development projects, but more have volunteers with specific skills.
That's a political question. What happened in the early 60s, they were taking people who were sort of what we called AB generalists, college graduates who didn't have any particular technical skills, just had a general liberal arts education, and putting them in countries to organize people living in poverty in the rural areas and urban areas on how they could create kind of neighborhoods, active groups, I guess we'd call them homeowners associations here in the United States. They certainly didn't own all their homes, but they lived in these barrios that were poor, and how to take the needs of the barrio, which were infrastructure, schools, roads, water, lighting, everything, health centers, and go downtown to the City Hall and ask City Hall for the help to get these things done. And it was a matching up the organizational volunteers served as the organizer and sort of the helping people prioritize and teaching them how to petition government, and giving them the self-esteem and encouragement to go out and petition government. Well, these same volunteers ended up being very active during the Vietnam War, and Spiro Agnew, who was Vice President of the United States, would be traveling around the world, and when he'd get off the plane in some of these countries, they'd be met with a group of American youth with signs saying, "Get out of Vietnam." And so the Nixon administration really put the kibosh on trying to get the sort of the liberals into the Peace Corps and downsize the Peace Corps. So essentially those 60 activists haven't been in the Peace Corps. And on the other side of the coin, the host countries have been really looking for technicians. They invite Peace Corps to come in, primarily teach English, to upgrade the skills of people in the country, whatever, your co-ops and agriculture, fishing, so on. A lot of educators doing educational television.
Sam, what's the role, as you see it, of the skill level of Peace Corps volunteers? 40 years ago, there were community activists who didn't have a specific skill that they would bring.
Well, I believe that what makes you a successful Peace Corps volunteer is desire. Desire to find a niche for yourself. And I mean, it's often when I recruited for Peace Corps, you know, I said, this is not something where you go over and it's all laid out and you go to a 9-to-5 job and you get a desk. I said, this is more like raising your hand saying, I want to go to Pocatello, Idaho, and getting off the Greyhound bus and telling everybody the moment you get off, hi, I'm a Peace Corps volunteer and I'm here for 2 years to work with you in Pocatello, Idaho.
And just hang out with the people and get to know them and let them get to know you.
Yeah, but you find out, I think you definitely have to have a mission when you're over an area of work, but you'll always find that it's not always quite as smooth at first, that the placement isn't perfect, and you kind of have to work yourself into a job. I think most cases now, the job's there, and it is pretty smooth, but in some cases, the job doesn't work out, their placement doesn't work out, and you can move around the country, and volunteers have even moved from one country to another. But the host countries really want, I see this all over the world when I've gone to Latin America and talked to presidents of countries and heads of departments. It's interesting, it's a different request of the United States. It used to be about money and foreign aid. It's now about skill development, really help our countries upgrade their skills. We got good teachers, we want to make them better. We've got good cops and lawyers and judges, we want to criminal justice system to work better. So it's, and even the legislatures, they don't have the idea of internships or fellowships or staff, the independence of legislatures, particularly in Latin America. So I see that there's a whole new field developing for Peace Corps volunteers, essentially the middle management skills that can be taught to upgrade the host country nationals' professionalism.
This week on Radio Curious, we're talking with Congressman Sam Farr in Washington, D.C., about a bill that he recently introduced in the 107th Congress in response to President Bush's request to double the size of the Peace Corps. Sam Farr was a Peace Corps volunteer in Colombia in the mid-1960s. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Sam, there's the long-time conflict between the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress. How do you see that conflict affecting the Peace Corps bill that you have introduced in the House and Senator Dodd has introduced in the Senate?
Well, interesting, Barry. The number of return volunteers in the United States House of Representatives, the total number is 6, and it's 3 Republicans and 3 Democrats. And we all get along beautifully. We all like each other. That universal service is something that we just have in common that is a special bond. So I think when it comes to Peace Corps, we all stand together. The difference now is that you have a Republican administration that's made a political appointment of a Peace Corps director who really didn't come from Peace Corps background. There's some controversy over the appointment. It's now that the democratically controlled Senate with Chris Dodd, who was a returned volunteer from Dominican Republic, is introducing legislation. I think in many ways they perceive that because Congress is doing something with the Peace Corps that Congress hasn't done in the past, that there's kind of a political process going on here. I think it's just all overblown. The reason we're doing it, frankly, is because President Bush, to his credit, came to Congress in his State of the Union address and asked that we double size the Peace Corps. So when we're going to double it, we want to make it better, we want to make it stronger. Certainly we need to put more money into it, and you know, like all money, there always comes with some additional strings attached. And that's what it's all about. It's actually a very logical succession to the request that if you're going to double the Peace Corps, Congress says, fine, we're really interested in doing it. Let's make it even better than it's ever been before. And then when you look at the legislation, the Republicans say, well, maybe we don't want Congress fooling around with this. But, this process will work itself out. I'm hopeful.
In the past, you have not been hopeful about getting meaningful legislation out of the Congress with the Democratic-controlled Senate, Republican-controlled House and administration. This is a different situation?
Well, Barry, it's interesting because a lot of evil comes out of the evil in the sense of attacking the environment. The president's and Republican House members' energy bill, I think, is a lousy bill. Some of their reform legislation is a step backwards. The Senate, however, is able to stop that kind of evil. And when we work together, as we did in the education bill, where the House, Senate, Democrats, and Republicans were all on board, it zoomed through. So I think that what you see is that if you're going to try to cut into programs that affect our environment, programs that affect our labor force, programs that essentially give the federal money back to the rich at a time when we shouldn't be doing that, and we're in a recession, those are the kinds of big differences we have in Congress. How you fund prescription drugs, how do you take care of providing health care to all Americans. These are the big battles. The Peace Corps shouldn't be one of those. This should be like the education bill. It should be a slam dunk. We're going to have some, I think, some initial differences, but it's key that Chris Shays, who led the campaign finance reform battle, who is a returned Peace Corps volunteer from Fiji, he and his wife were both in the Peace Corps, and his wife now works for the Peace Corps, that Chris Shays is the point person in the House of Representatives as far as administration is concerned. And I think if we get Chris on board, we can make this bill move.
You've talked in the past about how to lobby, and maybe Chris Shays, getting him on board, is a good example of how the average citizen who is concerned about international understanding can do something to promote the Peace Corps bill.
Well, the beauty of American democracy is, and the beauty of the House of Representatives being the people's house, meaning that everybody there has to be elected. You can't get appointed if a Congress member dies or gets run over or quits. The only way you replace that member of Congress is with an election. The House, the Senate, you can appoint. Even the President, as we saw President Ford, can get appointed. But the House of Representatives has uniquely been one where everybody has to get elected. What does that mean? That means that the members of the House of Representatives have to be very mindful of the concerns of their constituents. They're essentially given a contract to come here every 2 years at election time. And I think the American people fail to realize how powerful they are as individuals in being able to decide whether to renew that contract and what kind of attitudes and votes a member casts in Congress.
Well, let's talk about how the average person can affect that power beyond going to the polling place.
Well, on any given issue, I mean, I try to teach this to kids all the time. First of all, you have to, in your own mind, figure out what's broke that needs fixing. What is it that you need to have done? And then what government is the government that does it? Obviously, if it's a zoning issue, you've got to go to local government. If it's a licensure issue, you've got to go to state government. If it's a Medicare, a military, or any of these highway funding, or any of these other big stuff, you got to go to the United States Congress. And the way you go to the United States Congress is you most effectively go to the congressperson who's in your who represents you. And you talk to them, and you talk to their offices, either by letter, by phone. Best way is always personally, and to identify yourself. And I tell people, because it's election year, it's going to be very easy to see your congressperson, because they're going to be out and about campaigning for re-election. And even if you don't support them, you're not even in their party, and you know, there are some events which are either, you know, $5 events, $10 events, or town hall events. go to those and introduce yourself and tell them what your interest is. Why do you care about them being in Congress? There's something you care about, children, anything it is, international issues. Because they'll listen. They'll go back to them and they'll say, you know, we got to make sure we do this and do that. I've heard that over the weekend. And then the other way, the best way is to really, if you're getting serious about legislation, is to take a look by committee, who sits on that committee. And then get constituents, that is the people who are in the districts, of the members of that committee to go to them best of all and say, we'd like you to support or oppose a particular legislation. If it's to support, you ask them then to co-sponsor the bill, because if they put their name on it, they're going to vote for it. And I always say, if you really want to zero in on where you can be most effective, you take the committee of jurisdiction, where the bill goes, the committee that has the ability to hear it and to vote on it, and you single out the members of that committee. Now, these committees in Congress are big, bigger than they are in local government. They're about 50 members. That means 26, 27 of them are in a majority. On any given issue, you can pick out Democrats and Republicans that are in favor, and well, probably some that are always going to be opposed. You got to work the middle. But you can boil this 50 members down to, you know, a half a dozen. And the whole nation concentrating on a half a dozen members can really make a difference.
Sam, you've been in Congress now going on 10 years. The last time we spoke on Radio Curious was last September. What's changed here as you see it as a member of Congress since the September 11th events?
Just about everything. I think the attitude of Congress has changed because we're responsible for national security. We're trying to figure out what all that means. We're in the process of reviewing the president's request for a major overhaul of federal government, realignment of the federal government all around a sort of a top-down new bureaucracy on homeland security. It'll be the second largest employer in the federal government. Not that there will be new people coming. They're just taking reorganizing within existing departments, offices that would relate to the Homeland Security. So there's a reorganization going on. On Capitol Hill, we're like the world's worst airport. We have got, you know, inspecting people to come into the Capitol, inspecting all staff that go in. The only people that don't have to go through the x-ray machines are the members of Congress. But everybody else has to go through. They always hit, and there's not really much change on that. It's just that the lines are a little slower because you're looking more thoroughly. And I think the other difference is that they're really now searching the purses and bags of all the tourists. Well, there's millions of tourists here, so that there's a little backlog on that. And then we're going through major construction because we decided to build a new visitor center in the east side of the Capitol. So they're tearing that all up. So you got barricades and you got fences, and it's just it seems a little more awkward than ever before.
Isn't it making government less user-friendly?
Well, I think it is. I think that the most important factor of American democracy is access to government, and it has to be very easy and very simple. I mean, unfortunately, Americans don't really have to work very hard to have good government. That's probably why they kind of take it for granted and don't vote as much as they should. But I think that any kind of time you put up a barrier or make it a little visibly difficult, people just don't want to participate in or go in or do that. You know, they just avoid it in their hurry. And I think that hurts us, because I think what happens when you do go in to see Congress in session, when you do watch C-SPAN, is that you begin to realize, my God, there are people that think just like I do, and they're in Congress. And that gives you some confidence that maybe this government of the people, by the people, for the people, really does mean something. And maybe there are people there that'll get things done that I want done. And that's the great spirit about America, that it's so different than any other country.
When you come to Congress, is there a specific agenda that you bring?
Yeah, you bring the agenda from...
No, you personally.
My own, well, my entire life experiences and my values, yeah.
Or are there some specific goals that you hope to accomplish
as a member of Congress beyond the Peace Corps bill that we've talked about?
Well, my wife said that even though I'm elected to Congress, I'm still just a Peace Corps volunteer who's changed his barrio. My passions are about wiping out the causes of cultural poverty, which are inadequate housing, inadequate access to education, and inadequate health care. If you can take care of those three items universally, you've wiped out the culture of poverty. You'll still have people that are rich and poor, but there won't be a continuation that poor will remain poor.
Well, Sam Farr, I want to thank you for joining us on Radio Curious. And as you know, I always like to ask my guests to tell us about an interesting book that you've read recently.
Well, I just happen to have it here right in front of me, and it relates to your backyard because I have a wonderful friend named Sandy Lydon, who's a professor emeritus from Cabrillo College. He's a history professor. And he and other members have just written a book called Coast Redwood, A Natural and Cultural History. It's all about the natural descriptions of redwoods and where they come from and all of that. But I think the most important part is what he wrote, which is the cultural history, the people behind these trees and where they these gigantic coastal redwoods existed, including Oakland and Berkeley, one of the largest stands of redwoods in California, totally harvested, not a tree left. So it's just, I've read this and I think it's a great interest because a lot of it reflects on where you live and your backyard and a great part of the United States. Most of all, Barry, you just always keep me thinking and I really appreciate your calls. It's the most unusual radio program that I ever have the opportunity of being on in the United States. And I thank you.
Well, I thank you too, Congressman Sam Farr.
Sam Farr is a member of Congress representing the Central Coast of California and also a former Peace Corps volunteer, having served in Colombia from 1964 to 1966. The book he recommends is Coast Redwoods, A Natural and Cultural History by Sandy Lydon. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. I'll give you the address in just a moment. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your cards, letters, suggestions, and ideas for future programs. And here's the address. Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. And the email is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Stay curious, be creative, and join us again next week.